But let me check that list of things.
Just going to be Simpsons drops only from here on in. Welcome back, coaches. Rob Calder once again, joined by the high-performance coach, Victoria Metro Women Genero. Hey, welcome.
Hello.
Joined by potential Father of the Year candidate, Nick Mihai. Welcome back.
Definitely not after my list from last week, I wouldn't think so. But no. Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, great to have you. Nick's foray into the world of parenting has been an experience for everyone.
It looks like he's had some sleep. Early days, he looked disheveled.
Yeah, it was a struggle at the start. It definitely was. Yeah, fresh. He actually he slept pretty good last night, so you know I'm feeling really good. I did have a list last week, but look, it wasn't very basketball specific. So I do have maybe one that's more relatable to coaching, if you want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's this false belief within my family and Sarah's family that I am one of the few people that can settle my son. But actually, all it is I use the same coaching technique where I lower the tone of my voice or change the tone of my voice, lower the heart rate. So do use all the coaching techniques and it starts to settle him. So it's a little bit of a coach parenting thing that crosses over as well. So that's as close as I can get to comparing parenting to coaching. Yeah,
this is different to the story you told me before where you just said we put the Lion King on and just wait.
That's also happened, yes. He loves the Lion King, I tell you.
How can you not?
Yeah, I know, right.
There we go. Parenting tips with Nick Mihai. Don't know that we'll get this on every week. But you can, of course, follow along on the At Talking Split social media accounts on Instagram, YouTube and X. New drill every Monday, new podcast every Friday. You can follow along with Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. So if you can turn on the auto downloads, that would be fantastic. Nick, you were down at Warragul on the weekend, near where Jenna's from originally.
Good old Gippsland.
Oh. Maui?
Traralgon.
Traralgon, sorry, my bad. I know it's a bit of a rivalry too. It's,
my brothers were born in Maui and then I was born in Traralgon. Yep.
Oh, okay, interesting. Warragul. Mm. How'd you go, Nick?
Yeah, look, really great group of coaches. So we ran a community course from early in the morning and then late into the night, starting in the afternoon, we ran a club course. Coaches were super engaged, just super excited to learn something new. They're doing something incredibly well out there because there's a great mix of male and female coaches. They're excited to grow as coaches as well. And even just like off topic, like I rocked up half an hour before the course began and I had a look out in the car park across the road and there are people with like families and stuff just having barbecues at like 9 o'clock in the morning. Like they're already up, they look fresh, and I'm like, you guys get life. Like it was a really, it was just something, you know, that I saw that was really interesting to me as well. But one last thing that I'll say about Warragul is whoever organized the basketball court extension or upgrade, you should be applauded because it looks fantastic.
Awesome. Excellent. Great way to spend your weekend, of course. Jenny, you're fresh off 20s. How'd that go?
It was good. It was good. Nationals is exhausting. With 20s, obviously, a much shorter prep than what 18s and 16s is. But really proud of the group that I had with Navy. They individually all got better and then as a team we got better as well and they took a lot of information and we had a really enjoyable week.
Yeah, it's tough. Like 20s is, like if anyone was ever going to say, hey, you can coach a state team, which age group do you want? 20s is not the one I'd want. Like because it's such short prep time. Everyone kind of gets thrown together really quickly. It's over Christmas where you have limited player availability from a coaching perspective as well. It's a rough one.
Exams, schoolies, yeah, because of the age group. So, yeah, preparation is not ideal. Yeah. And the Vic men absolutely felt that in their preparation, obviously. Yep. We were pretty lucky. We had majority of our group together for the days that we did have training. But, yeah, it's short, but they took a lot on and I'm really proud of them.
Yeah, awesome. I did catch you guys late in the week, an overtime win against ACT in that last game. It's always a nice way to finish the tournament. It's a tough one to just continue to get there.
We were down by 20. Yeah. So to fight back, send it to overtime and then run over them in the overtime was a really, really great way to end. And the girls were rewarded with how hard they played
all
week.
Absolutely did. Speaking of down 20, Nick, a little bit stressful on Sunday, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it was at half time, that's for sure. yeah, one of the interesting things about that game is we spoke a little bit about if you're a coach, be yourself, don't try to be someone else. And when we were under pressure, I could say that the different coaches brought their style and personality out to get it over the line. I mean, one of the things that brings to my mind is, you know, Sam McKinnon, one of the assistant coaches at Phoenix, had a really, really straight down the line speech with
that
some of the guys.
That doesn't sound like Sam.
It was like, he was like the Tony Robbins of coaching, straight to the point, doesn't mess around and just tells it how it is. And look, it might
Can
have
you
been
imagine
a
what my household's like? Oh.
Best trained dogs in the world.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, terrified of any like male voice or something. Yeah, exactly. But it was just interesting to see. But yeah, really, really special moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So good luck when that rolls back around, what, next Thursday you guys are on?
Yeah.
For the next round. So
against the Hawkies, it'll be tough.
That will be a tough one. Good matchup though. Like it's
yeah, we got them a couple of times as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, so. Especially it's a long break.
Mm-hmm.
Like for if you're a Warra, it's tough.
Good for Phoenix. Derek Walton Jr., will he be back?
I mean, potentially. I mean, he's moving around. He's getting shots up. But, I mean, a lot of things have to be ticked off, right? Like, it's, who knows?
No hot scoop on this pod. Come on, Nick.
No hot scoop. And even if I said it, Rob would have to cut it out anyway. So.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, Nick's sweating, just like, Rob, can you just wind that back 30 seconds, please, before Jenna asks me this question?
In fairness, I'm generally sweating all the time anyway. So, no one could tell the difference.
Excellent. So, today we are talking a little bit of a checklist of all things that you will need for your upcoming season. So, that is, we're not far off senior season starting. Junior seasons are just finishing up grading for the last little bit now before they go into a season as well. There's a lot of planning that goes in place. And, I mean, generally, you can obviously talk to the 20s a fair bit here, and you've got to kind of pick the big rocks as to what you're really going to focus on for the course because, like, I think for the 20s, as an example, you would have had some bare bones in, some things that it's like, look, over the course of the next 5 or 6 days, we might be able to get to that point when we get there. But you've got to sort of scaffold a little bit too, and it's like, what are the things we really have to have right? What were one of the, well, what was the first thing that you really focused on, I suppose, that the coaches might relate to when we look at season prep?
I think for us, knowing what we were going up against defensively, we wanted to be really solid. So yep. From the very first training session, we wanted to be up and in, we wanted to be full court, we wanted to be pressuring, and then over the prep, I realized that our rebounding was defensively
yep.
was very poor. So that was a big focus to really box out and finish off that defensive possession because for the most part, I think our defense was pretty good. We're able to keep players in front of us, which was a big thing. Contest and then contain was just the two words that I use constantly. And then it was to box out and finish off the defensive possession, which over the course of the week, we definitely got a lot better at.
Yep. Do you ever get to that point in prep where it's like, I feel like I'm just chasing like 7 different rabbits and you constantly sort of lose focus throughout? It's like, this needs fixing, I'm going to try and correct that. But that needs fixing, I'm going to try and correct that. But now that over there needs fixing, I'm going to try and correct that. And you never really get to finish off the other ones.
It is very easy to fall into that trap.
Yep.
I am very much, especially with Navy, being the development group, just KISS, keep it simple, stupid. You can't focus on too much because then you lose everything.
Yep.
So we tried to keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah, and I think it's a good lesson for coaches too. Like, don't overcomplicate something that doesn't need overcomplicating. Like, simple rules, simple structures, simple things that can actually make a really big impact because ultimately, how often does the team that's not the best defensive team that just keeps the ball in front of them and finishes possessions end up the loser? Very rarely. It just tends to go that way. So I think the ability to keep things basic for everyone is going to make everyone just a lot less stressed and a lot less anxious. If you have, say for argument's sake, 15 different ways of guarding the on-ball screen, your players might remember 3.
If that.
They'll do one of them okay. The other two will be a little bit ratty in there. What are you going to get out of the other 12? Well, probably not much. So I think the ability to keep things simple is a real crucial one for all of our coaches. That doesn't, it's not just 20s, that's 12s. Like, everyone needs to be in that world.
It's really easy to want to fix everything and it's just not yep. possible.
Yep. So it's what makes the biggest difference. Like, what can I change now that will save us 10 points per game or get us 10 points a game? That's the one you sort of go to. The trick plays, maybe you don't have time for that.
Jenna, just with your assistant coaches and stuff, did you assign them some of those basic tasks? I mean, we got some aspiring junior coaches that one day want to be a state coach. What do they need to be ready for and prepare themselves for a tournament like that?
Yeah, so Lauren, I had her on defense. So that was her main focus. What defensive coverages were we in? Where were we breaking down so that I knew exactly what we needed to change, any adjustments that we needed. Dustin, I had on offensive spacing in particular, because that was something that I'm sure everyone feels that a lot. I think in terms of the offense X's and O's, that's sort of where that's my favorite bit. I love doing...
Look at the head coach. I'm not giving up offense to anyone.
Yeah. Like, no one gets that bad boy.
Exactly. But in terms of our spacing and running in transition, that was Dustin. He has the loudest voice, so I needed him to do that. And then with Tammy, I had her on 1,000 timeouts, so I knew exactly where everything was at with that. In terms of scout, Lauren would be preparing for the next game. So she'd have the scout on who we were playing. Dustin broke down the O and D. I hope this is all making sense to the coaches out there.
Absolutely.
Breaking down the O and D so that I could do the review after that. So that just saved time for me. And then I had Tammy on the paper scout. So she had all the stats and what we're trying to focus on for that next game.
It's actually really good for the coaches listening to understand how much of a process this is. And you're not just sitting next to the coach, like you have a very important job. It may seem simple, but it's not. It's incredibly important.
And taxing. Mm. Like, if you're one coach trying to do all of that by yourself, impossible. You're going to be burnt out within 15 minutes of the game. But it's also, there's probably a little bit of a myth out there that, you just turn up and coach. Like, that would be nice. But the reality is very different. If you turn up and just coach and you've put no time into your film review or the upcoming scout, your players are going to know straight away because they talk. Like I know when I was involved with the senior team, we're all at the airport sort of sitting there waiting for the flight to come in. And we're coaching the women's team. The men's team said, hey, can we have a look at your scout? And so we sort of showed them the paper scout and the film scout. And they're like, you guys get all this? This is just what we do. And they're like, we don't. And straight away, you could sort of say, we may have stitched up the head coach here of the other team. But it's what it is. Like, people talk. They know who is doing the work, who is not doing the work. What does your prep time look like? Are you mailing it in, so to speak? By having coaches with very clear roles on what their job is, but also not overburdening them. Like, I always love doing a paper scout. Like, I find that I retain the information a lot better when I'm writing stuff down. And if I have to put down, like, stats, I'll remember a stat because I've had to write it down. But if I try and do that and the video scout at the same time, my attention to detail is a little bit average. I forget stuff and it's just not as clean. So by having very specific roles, it actually makes it a lot easier for the assistant coaches. They feel like they're being used because they are. They feel like they've got some ownership over what they're doing, which is important as an assistant coach because similarly to what we were talking about before, your eyes can wander in that, am I doing busy work or am I doing valuable work? They need to know it's valuable work. So by having roles in all of that, you've played into a lot of people's strengths with what they're good at. They now feel part of a team. And when you've been, I don't want to say thrown together as a coaching staff, but it is, it's thrown together. You don't have years to build that relationship. You have to figure it out. And that's hard, but it's the job of the coach. So was there a concern, and this will all relate back in, we'll just fire questions at Jenna because she's the most recent one to have coached, obviously. But when you're talking your offense in particular, was zone something you were really conscious of, like that if you get zoned, you need to have something for that?
Yes.
Yep.
But I kept it pretty much the same as our man offense,
yep.
Just different cutting positions.
Yep. Makes sense.
So I wanted, again, to keep it as simple as possible. I didn't want it to... It was such a short prep.
Yeah.
You definitely need a zone offense. Absolutely. Because.
Yep. You will see it.
Yeah, you will. See it. Yeah.
You will.
Yep.
So it was just sort of different wrinkles off of our man offense so that it was simple enough for the players.
Really like it. Personally, I see so many. And look, when I sit here and I say, I've seen so many coaches do that. Yes, because I was one of the idiot coaches that used to do this where it's like, okay, here's our matchup playbook. Here's our zone playbook over here. They're two separate things. You now need to remember another set on top of everything else. Just little wrinkles, small little adjustments so that your spacing can remain. You know, I was working with a coach once. It's like, well, this is the offense we run against the 2-3 zone. This is the offense we run against the 3-2 zone. And this is the offense we run against the 1-3-1 zone. It's like, cruel, but that's three offenses that they're now got to try and remember.
On top of all the man offenses.
Exactly. When, okay, if you get a 1-3-1 zone, you might get that once every 6 or 7 games thrown at you. You've got something. And look, I loved it from a preparation perspective, but do you really expect your kids to remember that and be able to execute it when they see it so rarely? Do you really want to spend time on, oh, but it's a good two-guard front, high post, two-corner? I'm not doubting that it works, but by the same token, could you not just get something that works against a 2-3, a 3-2, and a 1-3-1 and lines up with your matchup sets? From an efficiency perspective, that's probably where I'd be going. So it is hard because you want to have an answer for everything, but you can't have an answer for everything.
Did you add wrinkles though during the week? Was there moments where you're like, we just need to add this little layer to what we're running? Or did you go, nope, we're going to stick to the plan, we're going to continue to do it? Did you move players, anything like that?
I love wrinkles. Mm-hmm. It's my, as I said, as a coach, it's one of my favorite things to do. You see how the defense are defending and you know what will counter that. So it was all within the offensive sets that we had. And it was generally out of ATOs or first play of the game or out of halftime. You had to be mindful of who was on the court, though, when drawing up those wrinkles, sure, because not everyone can read off the board as well as others. And so that was me getting to know my personnel as well. But yes, I love wrinkles, and over the course of the week, we added a few different things in. Always good to have a shoot around where you can actually run through the first play of the game, which is a wrinkle, so they can actually feel it and run through it. But yeah, some of the ATOs weren't executed quite like I would have liked, but it is one of my favorite things about basketball to be able to do that.
It ties back into the, you know, the season prep. You can plan, but there's going to be so many changes you're going to, sure, have to deal with throughout the week as, yep, well.
Well, and just everyone will guard your stuff differently. Like, it's everyone's got their own way of doing things. You might play against a team that traps on balls. You might play against one that drops and goes under on ball. You're going to have a rule for something in there somewhere that everyone can read and make it an adjustment to. And, you know, there were plenty of players that I had in timeouts where it's like, look, you're one of my best five players that I really want on the court, but I don't trust that you can remember what I've drawn up here and then go and execute it out on the court. So you got to sit them out. And it sucks to have to do that, but it was also something that's like, well, okay, we need to get better at this somehow. Now, in a tournament situation, like Jenna had, zero chance. Like, you don't have time. Like, to be completely fair, you've got to go with what you've got. And there are also times where you kind of ride the hot hand and it's like, well, actually, you're probably not one of the five players I trust the most, but by the same token, you've just had 18 points in three quarters. We're going to roll the dice on this and see if we can kind of continue that. Because there were plenty of times where what you draw up is not necessarily what happens, but a player's ability to create and go do their own thing makes you look like a freaking genius over on the
sidelines.
The
amount of times that's happened to me, I tell you what, yeah.
But it is. That's your job as the coach, though, is to put your players in a position where they can do what they're good at. For some, it's shoot. For some, it's drive it. For some, it's move the ball. Like, everyone's got a different role in all of that, but I think that's the biggest part of it. Not everyone reads off the board the same way.
And I'm really deliberate with how I draw on the whiteboard.
Yep.
Like, I'll set the whiteboard up the same as the court. We are going this way. This is, yep, the right-hand side of the court. This is where you're taking it out, so that they look down the court. Yep, understand, then look back. Still doesn't always work the way you want it to.
No, it doesn't. And if you, coaches out there, if you think that's easy, just hold the whiteboard a different way than where you would normally hold it. Mm-hmm. And it messes me up 9 times out of 10 where I'll sit there and it's like, but I'm used to the 1 being over there. I'm used to the 4 being over there. And now I'm looking at just from a different angle. I know the offense. Like, that's not a problem at all. But by just changing it can mess with people.
And it's interesting because I played guard and post. I was used to seeing the floor from different ways. Because when, yep, you're a post, you look up the floor. When you're a guard, you look down the floor. So it's almost like you need to draw it a couple of different ways so that everyone understands where they're supposed to be, but you don't have time and a timeout to do that.
No, exactly. And you are. You're under the pump. And, you know, it's not like, say, a Friday night game or a domestic game or something like that where the refs are kind of happy for you to have like a 2.5 minute timeout if you want. Like, there are times where it feels like this
at
thing goes
Nationals,
for 25 seconds.
Time in. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you genuinely don't have time for it. Mm. So you've got to be really quick. You've got to be really succinct, but you've got to make sure everyone understands it too. The ability to ask questions, hey, does everyone get that? You're probably not even getting time to get an answer to then readjust if you have to.
I've checked with players in the past. Which way do you like me to face a whiteboard?
Yep.
And just taught myself that way. Sometimes that just works, but then you don't really get all the answers. You probably get three or four that like it a certain way. So you've got to be careful with that as well.
And I think that's where practicing at training is really important, so that you're not getting to a game and that's the first time they're reading off the board. So it might be you have a timeout in training, you're drawing up something and letting them go execute.
Yep, and it is something that that Zoe did late last year with some of the Saturday sessions. Like, we threw an offense in that they don't run normally. It's like, we're just going to teach an offense, see how quickly, one, they can pick it up, but then we're going to teach some defensive coverages within that offense and see how quickly they retain that. The first week they did it was diabolically bad. Like, it was just horrendous how bad it was. Week two, though, all of a sudden it's like they realized they had to be mentally switched on too. Like, it's one thing to be physically present at a training session, but being mentally present at what's going on is it's a completely different beast. Week two, they were much better at it. So it's something they can learn. You've just got to be okay doing it. Now, you might do that at your training session with like, hey, we're just going to go mid-pick and play and then just see what happens. But when you're in that situation, I want this. When you're in this situation, I want that. And you can give them some rules, but be okay with mistakes. Because ultimately in a game, there is going to be a kid that just sits there and says, I can see that you're about to trap me off at this on balls, but I'm going to split it. And you're going to be caught in rotations and people are going to have to work stuff out really quickly. We can't hold their hand forever as coaches. They're going to have to make some stuff up. Just kind of how it rolls. If it works, of course we diagrammed it that way. If it doesn't work, stupid players. Like, it's, don't do that. But it is something you've got to be really creative with, is how can you use your whiteboard at training sessions? Because I think that is such an undertaught part of our game and what we can do.
Can I ask you both a question? Do either one of you in practice, when you're whiteboarding, do you have them standing up around you? Because I've seen coaches do that, and I understand you can probably get away with that with seniors, but for juniors, it never made sense to me. I always sat them down because that's how they're going to see the whiteboard on a Friday night. They're not generally going to be standing around me. If you did do that, why?
I think I was probably just at a training session and didn't think to recreate a game environment. I think it was just, hey, guys, we're all right here. Let's just go do it. I'd love to think that there was a part in the back of my brain that's like, well, there might be a time in a game where they have to run over at a timeout and I have to diagram something quickly. There was no thought that went into that whatsoever. But that might be a reason why you do it.
I think just at training, the convenience of just being like, come in here, let me draw this up.
Yeah.
It's quicker. Yeah. We've got things to get to during the training session. I can't come and sit you down for exactly a minute and go through what a normal timeout would be. But it's probably... I think coaches maybe should do that sometimes too, because it is replicating what is in a game.
Yep, for sure. Have you done?
I've always sat them down, even if it's 30 seconds. I used to do this thing in training where I would train with the twos coach as well, and we both during practice had a timeout each through the drills where we could yell timeout, I've got it sideline, and he had to start defending no matter what drill we were in. Yep. And I had to sit him down. I had 30 seconds to draw something up, and then he had one as well. Okay. Here we create the scenario and I have to figure it out just to keep us on our toes.
Yep, I don't mind that at all.
Love situations.
Yeah, okay, so we're about to hit on the next one then. Last second place. Did you have something in your back pocket just in case, like late clock, limited time left, that you knew, hey, we're going to this?
Always.
Yep.
And for
did the players know it?
Or no.
Yeah, okay.
That was in my pocket on a piece of paper. Always have something for a two and a three for sideline and baseline, but that's just for me. And it's out of our sets that we already have, just with wrinkles though.
Yep. What was the reason for not giving it to the players? Was it like a bandwidth thing? Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
We've already given them so much with the review the night before, the scout the next day. There's a lot in their little brains and I want them to focus on playing naturally. And then if it gets to a point where we need something, then I'm hoping that... they'll be able to pick it up. If not, that's okay as well.
Yep. What about you, Nick?
Yeah, definitely had a set of them. Never wrote them down. I just remembered them. But had a three, had a two, had one to get to the free throw line, had one as well where I had about 1.5 seconds and under. And I need something for that as well.
Always the same.
Yeah.
Ah. So depending on who we were playing...
always the same, but had wrinkles, right? So yeah, like it's just dependent on the players, who was hot, how they're defending it, that sort of stuff.
Yep. But
yeah, very, very similar setups most of the time. Yep.
So I would normally show them to the players at the first training session of the year. So that's how I would do it. We'd just run through it quickly. It's like, hey, I don't really expect you to remember any of this stuff, but this is what it might potentially look like if we ever need like a sideline out of bounds, a baseline out of bounds, just so they've seen it once.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. During prep, yeah, we've gone through it before.
Gotcha.
But
okay,
prior to the game, it'd be different things depending on how I know the other team defends.
Yep.
So they've definitely seen it before, just for what I know will work against the team we're playing.
Yep. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. And you didn't change that 15 times throughout. Like, it was just a case of, here's our option, here's our option, here's our option, and whatever we get, we get.
Well, yeah, there'd be wrinkles from ATOs and, that they've all seen before that we've done during the practice games and training leading into the tournament.
It's interesting. The last second stuff is, I mean, this is the fun stuff as coaches, obviously. We look like
the best
tacticians that can, you know, read cerebrally what's going on and all this sort of stuff. But it's one of those things there. I think you need to have something in your back pocket as the coach. It's like, well, look, if I have to diagram something, what am I going to? But if I don't have a timeout, what can we call? And it's, you know, that's not the easiest thing to get right because, again, there's a lot going on in the player's head. They're fatigued, lacking oxygen because they've been running around, like all that sort of stuff. There's a lot going on for them. So we can't expect them to remember everything going on. So simple is better. Again, like there's a reason a lot of late clock stuff, even in the pro level games, is mid-pick and figure it out. There might be some misdirection into a mid-pick, but it tends to be where it is. And it's like, hey, let the players create and they can figure out for themselves what they need out of this. But like late second clock stuff, that can't be undersold. You may need it. You may only need it once throughout the year, but you will need it at some point. Like it's
at Nationals, there was only one play I drew up that they hadn't seen before.
Yep.
And they execute it correctly in terms of the action, just the timing was a bit off, which that's on me.
So why did it change? Just out of curiosity.
I knew this play would work because they were switching and it was a slip play, like a back screen slip.
Yep.
It was from the sideline.
Yep. And it did, to be fair. I was actually at that game. Like but it is one of those things that you have to be really conscious of. And this is kind of one of those things, that when do you change? Because if you have something that you're comfortable with, you keep going to, and I mean, Nick, you lived in the shuffle world for a long time. First and thirds was just a staple of that environment in particular. A lot of the Melbourne coaches didn't have to deviate from that. It's like, well, eventually I know this is going to work. Like someone will fall asleep somewhere defensively that will give up a layup somewhere. It does work. There's no problem with that. But were there any times where it's like, geez, I doubt this a little bit and I feel like I need to change off it?
Honestly, probably not so much with the shuffle because there's a lot of counters and wrinkles and sometimes people don't understand when they're just looking from the outside in on what the shuffle is.
Yep.
It's actually reads as well. You're actually making decisions within that. The shape's moving and you're making decisions within it. In terms of ATOs, you can make something look like let's say it's a green and create a slip and something like that, a wrinkle out of there as well. Yep. Just to go back to prepping and running through that's the ATO stuff, just going back a step. That's really interesting to me. I've never even considered that. So I would do situationals where I would prepare kids to learn my whiteboard, but not necessarily go, these are the things that we are running. Yep. So I think that's a really, like, made me think about, like, that's a really interesting point.
Well,
like,
unfortunately, I got there not through the greatest of ways, but usually because I would have players bail on practice within the 30-minute window before practice. So when I think I'm training at 7 o'clock with 10 players, frequently I'll be training at 7 o'clock with 6 and 7 players. And you kind of got to make some stuff up as you're going. You got a rough idea, but some stuff now doesn't work. And it was actually the boys' team that I was coaching. One of the things they enjoyed the most was like the 3-2-1s. And it's like, okay, it's ball on the sideline. You both have a timeout. It's 3-on-3. There's an inbound of this defense. You two will have to work out how to get open. You two have to try and work out what they're going to do to get open and how you're going to have to make a read off it. 3 seconds to go. On the catch, it'll count down from 3-2-1. And the amount of times that, and it wasn't so much late game from memory because usually I was pretty good at banking a timeout that I could use if I had to, but it was usually late clock during the game at some point with not long left on a shot clock or just before a halftime or something like that where there was like 3 seconds or less and they'd been in that situation before where it's just like, hey, a little head nod means we're going to backpick this and we're going to try it. That was perfect for us. They loved that. Like the amount of times they'd make turn around, threes off, 1 foot falling out of court. And it's like, geez, I don't want you to make too many of those because you're going to think that's actually an achievable shot for you where it's really not. But it was a little bit of fun for them. Like it gave them a little bit of a release where they could, it almost turned into horse. It's like, who can make the most ridiculous shot And this is like, guys, we'd still like a really high quality one if we could. Like,
let's missing not, the point here, yeah, fellas.
Exactly. Like, 2 points is still 2 points. It's not like 2.5 on degree of difficulty. Like, it was that kind of thing. But that allowed them a lot of fun. And every now and again, I'd kind of manipulate it a little bit. It's like, hey, I want you to go and trap that kid as we come out of this. And you try and mess with their heads a little bit. But that was fun for us. Like, I really enjoyed that. Just, it makes the most of a bad situation when you've got 6 and 7 players at training and you can't do everything you want to do. You don't want kids sitting out. You want them to be involved with as much as you can, but it's like, well, okay, it'll be 3-on-3, but no D on the passer, that kind of thing. So that, for mine, was a great way of just getting some late clock understanding as to what do we actually have to deal with. And then you start layering in, well, okay, both teams in the bonus, and you've got to figure it out, like, who's going to foul? Like, is anyone going to give one up? Are they going to try and challenge without fouling? Like, all that sort of stuff as well. Like, that's, for mine, that's the fun stuff. They don't need coaches there for that. They could do that themselves if they wanted to, but I am grateful they were there with the coach, but different problems. Press break. Like, everyone will need to have a press break in throughout the course of the season. You're going to get pressed by someone. It'll probably look like a narrow press because that just tends to be what everyone goes to as a bit of a default. The biggest thing, I think, on that press break is, can it work against full court pressure and that sort of delay half court pressure? Similar to what we were talking about with the zones, something that works for both is ideal in that world. So it might just be a different catch point, but the triggering actions look the same with who cuts, what the timing looks like. It's the same, it's just a little bit more compact in that world. For mine, press break is probably one of the first things I put in every season now. You guys go through it, I'm assuming, Jenna? Like, it's...
Have to.
Yeah. Like, and look, to be fair, a lot of teams will see the Navy team and think, we can get after that team. Like, they don't have the same level of depth, potentially, as the main team would have. Let's see if we can beat down on the guards. You've got to have some structure in place.
Yeah, that was key.
Yep.
I probably put it in later.
Yep.
But absolutely, it went in.
Yep.
Someone to the middle.
Yep. Yeah, that's the usual rule. Honestly, let's not overcomplicate things.
Yeah.
If you can get some movement through the middle, whether it be a cutter, whether it be a flash or whatever the case, you're going to beat most structured presses, I feel like.
That's, yeah. And no matter what age group you are in, you need a press breaker.
Yep.
My brother texts me on the weekend and his 8-year-old, 9-year-old, went against a press for 40 minutes in under 12. So you need it at every single level.
It is, and it's rough.
It like is.
Real, that's brutal.
Yeah,
that and is. They don't have the strength to pass it not as far. So it is rough. But, yeah, you need a press breaker at every level.
Well, and kids look for comfort, which tends to be corners. Because it's like, I'm going to run here. It's like, oh, please don't. Like,
there's just, 4 defenders.
Yeah, like it's that kind of thing. But even just the understanding of, you know, do I have a trail pass? So the inbounder walking in court, being just slightly behind the line of the ball. Ball can be reversed there if they need to. Those type of things just make such a world of difference in what you're doing. So, yes, press break. Does it have to be super complicated? Absolutely not. Simple is better.
And I believe at a last resort, so send someone to the middle, can't get that, drag someone behind the ball or the inbounder stays behind the line of the ball. And if nothing else works, just go set a ball screen. If you get the ball to the middle, they won't press you.
So, that's kind of my thing. I've always wanted 3 options, and it was always trail, middle, down the line. Mm-hmm. Very few teams can take away all 3 of those things.
Correct, yep.
I mean, great ones can, obviously, but that was kind of my thing. If I can get all 3 of those options, anytime someone catches the ball, middle, down the line, trail, we're pretty good in that sort of space. So I think the biggest thing is you just don't want to give the ball back. Like, I don't know if either of you saw the WNBL game. I'm just going to think. I think it was Townsville-Perth the other night where – all got inbounded. It was like a 5-point game, turnover. Suddenly it's a 3-point game. Everyone's gone from, I don't know, it should be okay. We're up by 5 to, we're up by 3. We can't turn this over again. Anxiety goes up through the roof. Everyone gets a little bit tense. Ball gets thrown out of court again. Okay, it's now a 3-point game and you're on D. Changes everything again. So just having something that your players feel confident with, I think, is a big thing. Do either of you have rules on who inbounds the ball? Like, is it a number? Is it a position? Like, is just closest person gets it?
It's the person, 100%. Yep. Like, I'm figuring that out in training.
Yep.
So I'm rotating them through to go, well, I think this is the guy who's going to inbound the ball. And then I figure that out. Yeah. So it's not necessarily position. If it's my big, so be it.
Yep.
Someone who I'm comfortable handling and making decisions. So it's definitely a person that I say you are taking it out while they're pressing. So if it's... There was a team in particular at Nationals who pressed after every single free throw.
Yep.
So it was like, X, you are taking it out.
Yep. So did you try and get them in like the rebounding contest when that was happening? Like when you knew there were free throws coming, did you have them in the lineup?
it works that way, yes.
Yeah, which is nice when it works that way. Like, I know a lot of guards tend to take the ball out on the theory that when it gets reversed back to them, they feel confident going. Like, for a lot of years there, it was always the foreman that had to take the ball out. It was almost like a blanket rule that any team you'd see, it's like, oh, get the four to take the ball out. It's like, it never made sense to me. It's like, I'm pretty happy to have the four get all the way out of here if they possibly can and have the guards deal with it. Yes, they can get trapped a little easier with bigger players, but I was actually okay with it. Like, I feel like guards are going to be okay against the press compared to, like, your four. But, you know, everyone's different, I guess.
I know coach has always designated me to take it out.
Yep, that was your rule. Like, was there anywhere where you just got a little bit, like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, this is stressful?
Nah.
Nah, it was just a comfort
Yeah, thing. Give like, me the ball.
Yeah, cool.
I'll make the right decision.
Oh, jeez. You can say that now that you're retired. We can't go back on the, oh, we probably could go back on the tape and
find some. Oh, of course you'll find some.
Of course. But yeah, that's what's expected to happen. You want someone that's got no fear of it. It's like, hey, I'm going to make some mistakes here. That's fine. But don't yell at me for it. Yell at the point guard. Like, you know, surely they can bust this press open themselves. Like, there's part of it. So,
yeah. And I think having that, you know, there's some people who do shrink when there's pressure. So you definitely don't want them taking it out.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
On ball screen coverages. You have to have some rules of some sort with your team. Now, depending on the age group, that will change a little bit. Under 12s, you probably don't need any on ball screen rules.
Because, I would hope not.
Yeah. Like, okay. There was one year. Yes. Where I was coaching under 12s, and we ran into a team that was very shuffle focused. Like, and when I say shuffle focused, like first option, and they torched us in grading, and like they put us like 65 points plus, and it's like they absolutely smoked us early on, and it's like we're not doing that again. Like, this is not how this is going to work, and they just picked us apart on on-ball screen. They had a big kid that was just a giant in under 12s that was just. Anything that went near him was just one of those kids that could catch and finish over anything everywhere. It's like, well, okay, we're not guarding that. Like, we can't do anything about that. We worked for about 10 weeks on how to trap the on-ball screen in under 12s. It's like, we're not losing by 65 again.
Wow.
We did trap the on-ball screen, but in that time, I also forgot about any other form of skill development with my players, and they were elite at guarding an on-ball screen in under 12s, but couldn't dribble. So maybe don't put all your eggs in that basket in under 12s, as it turns out. Now, we did play them again and won. Now, not because we trapped the on-ball screen. It's because the big kid was injured. But it's not the point. This is one of those times where, yes, you can have some stuff in place, but you got to be careful as to how far down this rabbit hole you go. Because, again, like similar to what we spoke about, you can have 15 ways of guarding the on-ball screen. To be honest, pick two. Like, and one of them should probably be your 80% of the time. It's going to be that. And if that's not working, well, that's your other one. And you get a 20% of the time. Now, I would not put, this is a personal preference, I don't think switching should be one of those two. Players can probably just switch by themselves. They don't need to necessarily be taught a huge amount other than don't switch passively. Like, that's my only rule on switching. Like, if you're going to switch,
is that
don't
age group? Is that age group specific? Would you, no. Or is that irrelevant?
Yeah,
up to 18?
Yeah. Yep. I'd try not to spend too much time with it. Now, I'm conscious that you probably want one of your ways of guarding it to be aggressive and the other one to be a little bit passive, as in, hey, nothing has worked for us here. We need to find a different way to do it. But I think about how I would coach on-ball screen coverages. Like, I tend to be like centered away from the on-ball person first. But that's always my default setting. Like, a wing on-ball, I ice that stuff. Like, I'd send it down to the corner because I'm a send baseline coach anyway, so that kind of lines up with what I'm looking for in that sort of space. In the middle stuff, I do tend to be a bit of a trap sort of person, like try and get it out of or get someone to pick up the dribble as best I possibly can. But I don't want to go too much more than that. I'm not a hard show person. It worries me. I've had a lot of bigs over the years that have just ended up in foul trouble because they hard show a little bit too aggressively, and it's like, comes from a great place, but then they just hip check someone into the backcourt, and it's like, no, you can't do that, and you definitely can't do it five times. So, for mine, I'm not a hard show person, but I can see why others would. Like, personnel dependent, for sure. Like, how many coverages did you have in for 20s, Jenna?
We had two, but one of them was a wrap switch. Cool, and then that. We were three-waying out if need be. And then the other one was a jam and under so we could keep our bigs on their bigs.
Yep. So just for those that may not have heard wrap switching before, do you want to just give us like a little, like the cliff notes?
Yeah, so the person defending the screener is switching out like normal. The person defending the ball goes over the screen and then is in like a hard denial. So as they're rolling, then I've got someone on the split line. If they're taller, then they send them out to the guard on the wing.
Yep.
If it's like for like, they stay, and we're trying to force that pass over the top, which I don't think we have great passes in this country, so I think that's a tough one.
Jeez, Jenna coming for a couple of guards here. Like, it's don't have great passes? Come on now. We've got great passes in this country. We've got bad catches. That's the problem.
And bad basketballs.
Passing is...
We'll be right back.
To be honest, I knew it was a little bit of a trigger point. I was just going to see how hard she was going to go on this.
That's why I jumped in.
Yeah. But look, it's legitimately an issue, though, because a lot of our kids don't understand that if the ball moves, someone will get open anyway. And they try and force stuff through minute little gaps. It's funny, I was watching...
They want to make the touchdown pass.
Yeah, they do. That's the one that gets put on social media and all that sort of
it
stuff.
It doesn't, because it's a turnover.
It gets put on someone else's social media. I was watching off topic. I was watching, I can't think who it was, but it was a Jason Williams podcast, but it was a video podcast as well. And they were talking about, like, how did you learn to pass? How you learned to pass? And he's like, for mine, it was just the easiest pass. And I wasn't trying to make behind the back passes or through the, you know, the little window passes. He's like, if I could get it there and that was the quickest way to get it there, well, that's just what I did. And it's like, well, that's probably one of the best passes we've ever had. That is sitting there saying, look, I'm not trying to be creative or flashy. I'm just trying to find the quickest way to get the ball from this point to that point without turning it over. And if that's what it was, well, that's what it was. There's something to it. Like, why complicate something that doesn't need to be complicated? But by the same token, if you can throw a behind-the-back pass that now opens up a different angle that you may not have had by catching the ball on your right, ripping it across your body, then going to pass on your left, well, why wouldn't you? Like, I like the idea behind it personally, but yeah, I'm with you, Jenna. Yeah, passing, it needs some work. It'd be fair to say.
Some is an understatement.
Yep.
A lot of one-on-zero happening out there, so well, that might be the case.
And that's where I was going to head with this. Like, is this a byproduct of how we train our kids at the moment? Like, the amount of kids that sit there and do one-on-zero stuff or one-on-one stuff. It's like, well, there's no decision-making involved in what you're doing here. It's read the defender in front of you, which is cool. Like, no problem with that. You do need to be able to do that. But there are also times where it's like, well, you need to be able to make a decision of when do I pass the ball and who do I pass the ball to and how do I get it to them?
Even just hitting a target.
Yep.
Just passing to a teammate with no defense. I don't think we always hit the target
yep.
on time. And I don't think it's a sharp pass. I think it's loopy. Yep. I'm on one at the moment about passing.
Ooh, a bit of a warpath. I like where this is going. There is an element too where our receiver does need to do a better job of being prepared to catch it. Because I think a lot of our shooters are hands by side, not shot ready necessarily. So it's like, well, why would I throw you the ball? Like, if that's how you're going to stand, you're not in a position to damage anyone anyway. So why would I throw it there? So it's a two-way street. But
agree yeah. with that. And if there's even like a slight little denial, I'll take Mel Downer's term, but dancing
yep.
rather than just... stepping over, leading, holding them off,
yep.
and then receiving the ball. They just want to dance and make it really difficult for the person passing. So there's a lot to it.
There is. Defensive transition. It's going to have to be a part of what you do. Is it the one that we like teaching? No. Is it the one that your kids will enjoy being a part of? No. Will it help your scoreboard? Yes. You have to be across the defensive transition side of things, just into what it looks like. Everyone's going to have different rules on this. Everyone's going to have different terminology with it. I know I got in, not trouble, but...
Oh.
No. I screwed up over one of the weekends where I'm like, hey, you got to go to basket on that. And they're like, what's basket? I'm like, well, that was how I always used to refer to last player back goes to basket. And they're like, that's safety.
I'm
like,
ball, basket, plug.
Well, that was what I thought too. But
Isn't it low now? Is it low?
Well, and this is that the issue we have with terminology. You got to make sure that all your players know.
Low is like split line. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Is that it?
No, but D-trans, basket or safety, basket. Do you say?
Basket.
I was always basket too. But yeah. A player looked at me like I had four heads. And it's safety. Like, no, we call that safety.
Oh.
Okay. Well, I think we're splitting hairs. It's the same thing.
Okay.
But can one of you get back? Like it was that kind of thing. It's like, well, okay, if I've screwed this up, no worries. But you've got to make sure that your players do understand the terminology. Whatever you're using is cool. Like, do what you do. But just make sure they are all aware of what that is because you don't want that type of situation. Like, I know a lot of the country coaches are using that ROS, rise of shot, that's almost the trigger for that's our defensive trans rules. And if that's what it is, that's fine. Like, you can use whatever you want to use in that sort of world. But the biggest thing is just don't give up layups. Like, and that's twofold. Get someone back and get someone to the ball as quickly as you possibly can and try and just pin that thing to a sideline. That will save you points in every single game you play. Again, not enjoyable. We understand it. However, vital. Defensive transition will save you games down the stretch. Is it like, how did you focus on it in short prep, Jenna?
So again, I tried to keep it super simple. So yeah. Mine was, if you were below the free throw line, you were crashing, because we had really good offensive rebounders. Our defensive rebound was not good, but we had really great instinct. So I didn't want to take that away from my players. So it was below the free throw line, crash, get on glass. If you were above the free throw line, you were back.
Yep.
Basket, safety, whatever you want to call it.
Safety, I found out.
I think I just said back. Yeah. Get back.
Good with that too.
Yeah. I think Holmes won.
Okay. I've heard home
as well.
Oh, yeah. So much terminology.
Yeah, I know. This is a dangerous door we're opening here.
Yeah, we can have a whole pod on terminology, surely.
You know how many times I've
been
asked
for
that?
Do not invite me to that pod.
Yeah. That is one for Coops. Like, yeah. 100% one for Coops.
Honestly, it is one of their most requested shows, is terminology. And look, to be fair, we're probably going to have to do it. But to be fair, we're also going to have to probably do it with video. I don't think it's an audio platform that we can talk terminology on. It's going to have to be a film one where we can either show some stuff on TV about what we're talking about, or potentially whiteboard some stuff if we had to. But I do think it is something we're going to have to get better at. But terminology changes so quickly too. So it's almost like you don't want to be all in on something just for it to change 4 weeks later and you've got to reteach it again. So it is a difficult one to get right, I think, the terminology side of things. But yeah, I mean, defensive transition is just going to be a part of all our lives from here on in, I think. It's going to have to be. We can't. And look, we'll talk to the international level more than anything else. Like, the athletes on a world stage are genuinely ridiculous. Like, they are in full-blown sprints where they can change direction, catch on the run, score over someone. You don't have time to just go, oh, maybe they'll miss. They don't miss. There's a reason they are what they are. You got to try and pull it up so that it doesn't get to that point in the first place. So it is going to be a long part of what we do, I think, at this stage.
And then just quickly on when we played Queensland, who were terrific in offensive transition, it was get back, especially in the first 5 minutes of the game, just to completely slow them down, because they were fast starters. They were long defensively, so were able to come up with stops, and then they were just kicking the ball ahead. So that game, it was get everyone back, especially those first 5 minutes, and then we adjusted as the game went on.
Yeah, and there's an element too, I think, with what you're saying there, with keep it close for as long as we can, because they were one of those teams that could get you in the first 5 minutes, and all of a sudden you look at the scoreboard and it's like, oh, it's 18-4. We probably can't get back in this game, or if we do get back in this game, it's going to take everything we have. Start of the fourth, we might run out of tickets by the end. So it's like, keep it as close as long as you possibly can, and make them make decisions, and make them have to make all world plays, because you're taking all their good stuff away from them. And look, they're still capable, there's no question, but it is a tough one. The playbook. Would you give your players a copy of it in the preseason?
VJBL season, is that what we're talking here?
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
No, definitely something that I would layer in our practices. Don't want to overwhelm them, so I would be, bringing it in every few weeks, adding layers on through that way. The other reason is, you know, they've got school academy, they've got state teams, they're incredibly busy, they're probably getting playbooks through there as well, so I've got to factor all that in as well. Like, we try to keep it similar to what we were running, or what BV was running, sorry. But apart from that, no, I wouldn't give them a playbook.
Yep. Jenna?
For the 20s team?
Yep.
We obviously do trials, and then we let the girls go and do their exams and have schoolies, and then we meet back. I think we had maybe 4 sessions before Christmas, and I'm big on putting players in positions to be successful. So I need to get to know the girls and what's going to be best for that group, and being new players, I didn't know what all their strengths and weaknesses were straight away. So I waited until our last session before Christmas before sending out the playbook, because I got to know them better, what they did well, where our strengths were and what our offenses should be. So I'm not someone who comes in with a predetermined playbook. So I waited until, that Christmas break, so they could look at it over the Christmas break, and then we came in after New Year's and we were rolling.
Yep. So was that a written playbook, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Video playbooks. This is where I'm heading in the future, I think, because our players are not brilliant at reading stuff off paper. They like to see animations. They like to see people moving around so they can understand spacing, timing, those sorts of things. I think that's the path I'd be going down now, is film it and send it to them. that might be a better way of getting transfer from our players that are not always capable of visualising stuff, I think. So I'm a big believer in give them a copy of it, not the physical copy of, you know, 35 pages full of baseline, sideline, out of bounds played. Like, that's going to be too much for them.
This is a PDF that I sent on WhatsApp.
Yeah, that's plenty, I think, in that sort of space.
Can I just say, if you do send out a playbook, make sure that you're going to use those plays throughout the season, right? You don't want to put 50 plays in there and you use 10 of them, okay? You might be able to get away with that at like state level and stuff, but Friday night with coaching, you can put 100 plays in. You're just going to increase their anxiety because they're going to have this self-expectation that they have to remember all this stuff as well.
There's also going to be a kid that's going to try and learn them all.
Yeah.
To never use them.
That would have been me.
Nerd.
No, absolutely.
Credit to you, but...
Absolutely. Yeah.
And but that was not me. No.
Nor I, Nick. But it is one of those things where it's like, if you're not going to use it, don't put it in. And the answer to all your problems is not always a new offense. Like, a lot of the times it's use what you've already got and adjust it through. So I would send out the scaffold of what this could potentially look like, but not all the wrinkles that come with it. Like, give them little bits of it and drip feed it where you need to. Because if I'm like a first-time under-16 athlete that's made my first VJBL team, for argument's sake, and then I get a 50-page document with all this offense, the first thing I'm going to be thinking of is, nope, like I can't get through this. Like, I've only just come into this environment, now you're expecting me to learn all of this as well? This doesn't work. So just be a little bit careful as to how much you're going to give them and all of that. The last two that I had down, season planning, when are you getting a break? So at some point during that season, because it is a long season, as we all know, as we go through this, you're going to need to schedule in a couple of breaks. Now, if you're in that senior space, it might be doubleheader weekend into doubleheader weekend into doubleheader weekend. It's like, well, do I need to be training Tuesday, Thursday in those weeks as well? Probably not. Maybe get one session in and do a team dinner, or just say, hey, everyone, just have the night off and just recharge a little bit where you can kind of do your own thing. I think that's got as much value in training when they're broken, sore, tired, grumpy with each other. Maybe just a little bit of space can be a good thing, but it'll also be a great thing for you as a coach. It's like, hey, I just need a night off. You go and spend time with family, friends, whatever the case might be. That's a valuable part of it. If you're in that world where, and look, we've all been pressured, I think, by parents to play a tournament. It's like, oh, we've got a long weekend coming up. We need to play a tournament. No, we don't. Like, we're having that one off. Like, it's just a... Tournaments can be great. They can also be the point where your entire team gets injured and suddenly you have no team left for the end of the season. So just be a little bit careful as to, okay, where are the ones that we really want to play? So that might be a preseason tournament. That might be a midpoint of the season tournament. You want to have another crack at it. But some of the other ones where it's like, hey, we probably don't need this one, I think is valuable.
It's true though, right? Like it's
especially when it's not going well. It feels like it's 14.
Yeah, but you've got to try and shift and find gaps even though none exist. You're exactly right. Like, I remember last season with my 18s team, and we would train every Tuesday, Thursday, but they had state commitments, some had Oz team commitments, and they're traveling an hour and a half to get to practice. So we moved it to a Monday night. We only did one session, and we gave them the Thursday night off, and they played probably the best they played all season.
So you're saying less Nick Mihai made the team better?
Yeah, well, yeah. That's no secret. That's been well established for many years, but yeah.
No, look, it's a valuable point though, like, yeah. Because sometimes less is more in that space, because you do have a lot of kids that are trying to juggle, especially in that under 18 space, exams and life in general outside of it. Sometimes they just need a break and have a night off training and go to the gym. Go do something else, like work on the body, work on the rehab stuff that can get you ready to play. But that goes for coaches too. Like, you need a break as well. You need to be able to recharge the batteries. Like, I can only imagine, I can speak for Zoe because we spoke about it last week, but like Jenna coming out of January, February, you must have been cooked. Like, you've got...
It's an understatement.
Yeah, you've got 3 to 4 months worth of basketball into 6 weeks in that sort of world. So you need to find time to just sort of sit there and say, hey, not today. That's not a bad thing. If you can get a look at your season whole and say, actually, that's the window, I think I can really grab a couple of weeks, great. That's a huge win. So whether it be school holidays, whether it be something else different, whatever, just find some time in there. The only other one I had was don't forget skill development. So when we're going to start talking about, you know, how to plan out for your season, there's got to be some windows in there where you're actually trying to make your kids better and not just trying to make them better tactically.
Passing is really important.
I have been told this, Jenna. Like, passing is a big part of what we do. So
really, that's surprising.
Yeah, it's but skill development matters. Like, better players tend to win games. So if you really care that much about winning, make your players better, not just tactically. And I cannot stress this enough. It is not just a tactical battle as a coach. Your job is to make the kids better so that they can go and play for someone else higher. That's the goal. The end goal shouldn't be with us. Our job is to make
it better. Is that out of small-sided games where you're playing out of something, or are you just doing one-on-zero repping? Like, how are you doing that?
I try and avoid the one-on-zero repping, Nick, and I'll save you all a 25-minute rant as to why I would try and avoid that. But it is one of those things where it's like, hey, I can break down tons of stuff. Like, I mean, we joke about shell drill all the time, being in part of every training session. Well, shell drill's a small-sided game. It's 4-on-4. Like, and it's the question I get all the time at coaching courses. Yeah, but where's the fifth player going?
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Do you always get that question?
Yeah, continually. Like, don't worry about the fifth player. It's 4-on-4. But it is. It's practicing your shades. It's practicing how to cut, how to defend, how to jump to the ball, those sorts of things. You can get all of that. It is all part of a skill development package that your players will need to succeed. What their success looks like, well, that can be determined somewhere else. That's not really a, you know, it's not on us to put ceilings on players. Like, that's up to them what they want to do with it. But it is our job to try and facilitate as much learning as we possibly can for these kids so that they do improve and they can go and get to wherever they want to get to in the end. Give them a chance. That's kind of the big thing for me. So if you're one of those teams that's lucky, that's maybe graded early, you have probably got up to a month of skill development. Like, that was always my biggest goal if I was coaching, say, a VC team. Try and qualify before Christmas so I can have those 4 weeks off effectively after, when you come back in January, to just actually work on player development. It had nothing to do with, oh, but now we can get an extra 4 offenses in. No, don't worry about it. Let's make them better players.
And don't add extra sessions. If anything, consider having a session off and getting them rest where they probably can't for the rest of the year.
Yep. It's a long year. Like, players get injured. Like, stuff comes up continually. So the more we can manage them, I think the better in that world.
Just on the skill development stuff, I think especially in Victoria, obviously court space and time on court is really valuable. And as coaches, we need to prioritise certain things. And I think a lot of the time it is the team stuff and the team offence. But if you don't prioritise the skill development, you're not going to get the biggest benefits out of what your offences are anyway. So you prioritise what you think is important, and I can guarantee you skill development is important. You need to make time for it.
Yep, without a doubt. Nicky, you're going to talk about your macros and your micros in particular with season planning.
Yeah, just for season prep. So I broke what I found the most important aspects of the game that I have to cover. It's not everything, but it covers the biggest bang for buck stuff. So I call it just the macros. That was D-trans and O-trans, ball screen D, shape, as in the shape you want to play in, whether it's 4 out, 1 in, 5 out, and shell. And within that, we have the micros. So, for example, presses, zones, sideline, baseline, out of bounds, excuse me, free throw line tactics, those sort of things would go under those macros, similar to like nutrition. And then to build on culture, I wouldn't necessarily have meetings. I think I've spoken about this before where I don't generally have too many meetings, but what I'll do is get my assistant to stat some things that I found important. Who's giving up the most straight line drives? Who's missed box outs? Who's bumping cutters? Excuse me. Who's producing a hockey assist? A hockey assist is a pass that leads to assist. Anything you want to do that builds a little bit of culture that's not a direct line stat. So that's really how I build my season prep.
Yep. And the important part is you get a little bit of everything in that. And it almost becomes like a menu before every training session. It's like, well, what do I really need to get in? And I want something from every one of those macros in every training session. Now, whether that ends up being the micro or whether it ends up being the macro itself, that's the important part. But it gives you a little bit of coverage in that you've got everything in there and you feel confident with that. So, all right, that is our season prep episode to a degree, but I do actually have just a little bit first.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So I got sent this during the week. This is from an athletics coach, Frank Dick, and I'll let it play. It goes for about 2 minutes, so we'll come back to this in a second.
You know, 100 years ago, I was a Scottish national coach, and I used to go around the tracks of Scotland working with coaches, and every now and again a little girl from this town or that town would turn up and hear a little voice, and I'd be working away and hear the voice going, "Mr. Dick!" Well, with a name like mine, you don't turn around too fast because you don't know what's going to be said next, you know? So, Mr. Dick.
Yes?
Will you coach me? Well, yeah, but not at the moment because I'm working with these people. Will you coach me later?
Yes, fine.
When?
Look, when I'm finished with them, I'll come and work with you.
Where's that?
Look, sit down in the stand. When I'm finished with them, I promise I'll come and work with you.
Promise?
Yeah,
see ya.
Fine. Now, after I finish working with you, I'll work with her. She's 9 years of age and she wants to go to run 100 metres. And I work with her for a few weeks. She goes to her first race. She lines up with another 7 kids. On your march. Set. Bang. Runs down the track. Hurls herself at the line. 8th out of 8 in 18 seconds. And comes back. Oh, Mr. Dick, I was last. No, you weren't last. Yes, I was. No, you were 18 seconds.
What do you mean?
Well, you've smashed the 20-second barrier. And I had you down for 19 seconds. You're a whole second faster than that. Do you know what this means?
No.
This means it's your lifetime best performance. Your own personal world record.
Really?
Yes. And in some ways, you're a first.
What do you mean?
You're the first athlete I've ever coached who's run 18 seconds for the 100 metres. Now, listen, in a few weeks' time, she's got another race. What does she think winning is now? If she does 17.9, she'll grab a flag and she'll run around the track. Because that's what winning is. Winning is being better today than you were yesterday. Every day. And if she keeps on working at that, in a few weeks' time, she's fighting with other kids to get to the line. And you might think to yourself, well, surely winning now, Frank, is beating them. Not if it's in 19 seconds, it's not. Or we've killed our definition. The reason you go into tough arenas in life is to be challenged to perform better. You cannot perform better if you're not challenged. Listen, you don't learn to climb mountains in life by going round them or asking somebody for a ladder. You learn to climb mountains by climbing mountains, by seeking out the really toughest challenges, because that makes you perform better. When you keep on going at that, one day you'll be a one and only. But the truth is, she always was, is, and will be.
Just a different type of take on things. Now, look, individual sport versus team sport, so it is hard to quantify winning. But a really cool take on, like, stop trying to beat other people. Just get better yourself. Well, and I really like it from a perspective of, look, we spend so much time worrying about scoreboards and, oh, but what have I scored and what have they scored? Ultimately, like, you're competing against yourself. And that's the fun stuff. Like, that's, like, we talk about self-motivated kids all the time. Like, they want to turn up and they want to play if they are self-motivated. And if they're constantly trying to beat someone, well, that may not be self-motivation, but if they're trying to be better than what they were yesterday, well, that is motivation. That's when you know you've got a kid that's like, I can do stuff with that. Like, you can find ways to get that sort of stuff. Just a different take on winning in general, I think.
I wasn't expecting this to get so deep. That was so beautiful to listen to.
Brilliant. Like, I got it sent to me during the week and I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. Like, I didn't love the high-pitched voice that he put on for the little girl. Like, that was, I don't know how we managed to swing that, but...
Love the words, though. Like,
brilliant.
Just all of it. Yeah.
Genuinely brilliant. So, coaches, figure out what winning is for you. And look, if it's still trying to win your tournament, cool. But if you're one of those coaches like, hey, that's not for me, I want to try and be better, I want to try and make a real difference, go back to that. So I think that's just a real relatable clip that we can go with as coaches. Jenna, Nick, thank you very much for jumping in. Appreciate your time. Kids, coaches, work on your passing. If you've learned nothing else, work on your passing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.